So lecture 9, February 14th, 2023, lecture notes, page 85. On a positive note, happy Valentine's Day to you and yours and all our webbies out there, my wife and kids who I'm sure are tuning in to watch my lecture for sure. And on the sad side, thoughts and condolences to Michigan State students and families. Another, I'm sure you heard, recent university shooting, so another mass shooting there, sorry for them. So conflicting emotions here. Accounting types, there's a meet and greet Thursday, February 16th, 10 to noon in the Student Center, room 218. Check that out, register there. Test information, as you know, mini test 4 closes tonight at 11:59 p.m. Mini-test 5 will open on its regular schedule this coming Friday and close the following Tuesday. Mini-test 5, covering this week's lectures, lecture 9 and 10, ends the material then for midterm 1. So I opened midterm 1 just after mini-test 5 closes because that's what's included on the midterm, mini-test 1 through 5 and all the textbook and lecture material. But things get a little busy during this time period. I'll recap that thought in just a minute. Enhanced Learning, Extra Credit, and Pack Back, number 2, closed Thursday. And number 3 will open Friday on its regular schedule. So on the calendar, as you're getting your mind right about the schedule for the class, what's going to happen? This week, as always, we'll have lecture 9 and 10, and next week, lecture 11 and 12. So we hold lectures on Friday, mini-test 5 and extra credit number 3 will open. Next Tuesday, on its regular schedule, mini-test 5 will close, and Wednesday, midterm 1 will open at 8 a.m. Midterm 1 will run for a full week and a day, so you have lots of time to catch up on your work and lots of time there. So it's going to run from Wednesday to Wednesday, but continuing the march, so you have to pay attention. On that Friday, mini-test 6 and extra credit number 4 will also open. So during these midterm times, things do get a little busier than usual in this class. Confusing, or we sort of got the layout there? We're good? Yes. Okay. Hands, thumbs up. All right. So we haven't talked much about the midterm exam since the first day of class. Let's spend a little time on those. Midterm 1 exam opens Wednesday, next Wednesday, not this Wednesday. The 22nd at 8 a.m., we're going to use Proctorio. Who's never used Proctorio? Just to have a sense of that. Okay, we'll talk more about that in a second. And it closes a week and a day later. There's lots of time to take the test. But it closes at 5 p.m., not 11:49, not 11:59, not some other. Are you messing with me? Not some other time. It closes at 5 p.m., so make sure you know that. Midterm 1 is worth 17% of your class grade. It includes all the material from lectures 1 through 10. That's through this Thursday's lecture, both from the lecture and the textbook. We don't do business in the news or marketing in the news on the midterms. We focus on content. It's what's covered in mini-test 1, 2, 5. And you know that every time a mini-test closes as a grade, you know it opens for review. You can go back and review that test over and over again if you want to. The midterm exam is 50 questions. And time, the standard time is 80 minutes. If you have extended time, it's 160 minutes. The questions are randomly drawn from the identical pool of questions that I use for the mini-tests, except the midterms and the final won't have business remarking in the news. Sometimes people get confused and they come back to me and say, I took the mini-tests 5 times and I never saw a single question on the midterm from my mini-test. What do you mean it's the same pool of questions? It's a big pool, folks. It's a big pool of questions, right? So you're seeing some in your multiple attempts. You can see a lot more if you do the review tests. You may not see them all. The midterm exam, which we perhaps harped on before, is open book and open notes. If you're an international student for whom English is not a first language, you can use a physical copy of a translation dictionary. You can't use an electronic translator because I don't know what else you're doing with that electronic device. So you can use a physical book to help translate, you can't use electronic translator. So neither you nor international students can use any digital stuff during the midterms. Gee, don't I take my test on a digital device? Yes, you can use a computer to take the test, but you can't use any other digital devices during the exam because I can't tell what you're doing. Midterm is proctored using Proctorio. Proctorio records your camera, microphone, and your screen. Why am I doing that? Because most of us are actually honest, but a small percentage of us like to get our grades through illicit methods. So I feel like I have to do something to help academic integrity. So I record you, your computer screen, and your audio. To make sure this works smoothly for you, you always want to start a Proctorio test by doing a reboot of your computer. And you also want to have no other programs or tabs running other than what you need to get to the test in Canvas. The test is on Canvas. You'll need to show a picture ID. So I prefer your KSU ID, but a passport or driver's license will do. But I have to see the picture in your face. I have put up now, I think it announces to you, but whether or not it does, a sample Proctorio World History quiz. It's an interesting quiz. I don't know any of the answers because it's history and not marketing, but you might have fun seeing the questions and the answers. But the point is, if you have not yet done a Proctorio test or want to make sure your current equipment works on it, click in the Proctorio Help module on Canvas, take the sample Proctorio World History quiz. It'll set you up. It'll make sure your machine is working, your mic, your camera, your add-on. This will not count in your class grade. Questions so far? Yes?
So, like, say if I, like, look the other way, like, do that, say I'm cheating?
I'll talk about that in a little bit. No, but I'll talk about it in a little bit. Sometimes there's a glitch in the system. I cannot tell you why, but the system asks you for a code or a password. No code, no password is necessary. If it asks you for it, the first thing I would say is, did you reboot your computer and do you have another programs running? Second thing I would say is try using Microsoft Edge instead of Google Chrome, which is what it usually expects. Then I would also say in the Proctorio Help module on my class in Canvas, there's some other troubleshooting ideas there. If none of that works, let me know. Open book, open notes test. You have to have physical copies of your books and your notes. Why can't I use my e-text? Because then you have to use a digital device and I can't tell what you're doing. Asking a friend, looking up the test questions and the answers online. So you need a physical copy of your book and your notes. Really, you do. You cannot use any electronic devices during the exam other than the computer that you're using to connect to the exam. You cannot access other online sites during the exam. That would be digital access. You cannot have notes from other sources downloaded from the web of the exam. It's hard for me to check on that one, but the idea is anything you write, your notes, your handwritten stuff, your tabs, great. You aren't supposed to be downloading stuff from other sources. If you have typed your lecture notes online during the semester, you'll need to print them out because you can't access them electronically. Also, you cannot have mini test questions and answers with you at the test. That would be cheating. Your notes, yes. The questions and answers, no. It's an individual effort. Somebody actually one time, when I called them on it, said, you didn't tell me it was an individual effort. It's a midterm exam. What do you mean I didn't tell you? It's an individual effort. You can't talk to others or collaborate with others during the exam. You might want to make use of the 2023 spring review tests to help you study for the midterm. Go to those review tests, and you can take the tests over and over and over and again, and 10 questions at a time, see a whole bunch of stuff from the question pool. So, for the midterm and final exams, I suggest you do the following. View the lectures and complete the lecture notes. Go back over the lecture notes and highlight the information in a way that makes sense to you. For example, yellow for definitions, green for examples, or whatever. Or use post-it notes to mark those key materials in your book. Read the textbook. Go back over the textbook and highlight the information in a way that makes sense to you. Then the tricky part, part five, study the material in the lecture notes and the book. A lot of students seem to forget that step. Use the review steps, then test to see what you do know and what you get right and what you don't know, and go back and review what you don't know. The midterms and the final draw from the same pool of questions as the review tests, you might actually see questions that could be on your test. That's not cheating. That's fine. Take the review test until you know them well and do well on them. Go back to study what you don't know. Bring your book and your notes to the test. Don't bring many test questions or answers. Take the exam. If you've actually done all that, it should be pretty easy. Problem is, this is not your highest priority. You have other things to do. You have other classes. You have other work. You got dates. It's Halloween. It's Valentine's Day. You don't get around to doing any of this important stuff. That's where we get into problems. Questions on that? Okay. To your point, and I don't know if there's... To your point about what counts as cheating, I don't know if this is rumor from last semester on how stringent I was being. If you have your lecture notes and your book with you, of course you're going to look off, turn pages, look back. That makes sense. If you got to tell your cat or your dog to go away or yell to your roommate, hey, I'm taking a test here, all cool. But you don't have books, you don't have your notes, and you're doing this the whole time. You don't have books, you don't have notes, and you keep doing this through the whole test, you're cheating. What do you want? I didn't fall off the test truck yesterday. So that's what I'm talking about looking up and down during the test. Once in a while, you got to clear your eyes, fine. But you're doing this the whole time. You're not being honest with me. So that's where the challenge of being academically honest comes in, okay? That's my concern. Questions on that? Yes. Sometimes is not the problem, but I'm watching you, and as I say, I can see you doing this. You're reading a question, and then you're looking down, and you're reading down here. I can't usually see you typing, but I can see you doing this, and then you're doing this, and then you're answering, and then you're doing the next one. That's different than, right? Clearing your eyes, talking to your cat. Great. Do you have a cat?
Dog.
Your dog. Get away. That's okay. But this other activity, it doesn't require a genius to see you're cheating. But normal activity, fine. Make sense? Am I making sense? And I'm not, you know, most of us are just doing our job. Some of us are trying to get over on everybody else. All right, also then, midterm grades. For all 10,000 and 20,000 level courses at Kent, we have to post midterm grades by the end of the day on March 6th. For our course, I'm going to base that on the first 5 mini tests, which you will have done, plus midterm 1 exam, which you have done, and any extra credit you have earned. That's about 36% of your final course grade will be your midterm exam, and I'll post that. Questions for me on anything I just said? The schedule, how things are going to run over, what you can and can't do, what you should do to prep for the course, taking that sample exam, the world history exam. Yes, sir. It's good. Personal notes. Yep. And you're going to hold them up and show it to me at the camera. It'll, at the appropriate time, it'll tell you to hold it up and show it to me so I can see it. Yep. We good? Any other questions? All right. So business in the news. This is a simple short story, but sort of interesting in a business sense. How many guys know Hanes brands, underwear and, you know, all that's the Hanes brands? All right. Hanes brand shares plunged after the company decided to make a dividend cut. Where are my finance people? Accounting people? This is your story, and we don't have any of you. All right, so due to gloomy earnings and forecast, Hanes Brands is an American clothing and accessory company based in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It's a leading global marketer of basic apparel. Hanes Brands operates in more than 40 countries and sells products under a variety of well-known brand names. Hanes, Champion, Maidenform, Bali, so that's global marketing. The company shares lost more than a quarter of their value. That's a pretty good dip. After the apparel maker eliminated its dividend to shore up its balance sheet as sales continue to slump. Total revenues were down 8% in 2022. Not that good. And expected to fall again in 2023. So we see a relationship here between sales revenues, something that's important to us in marketing, certainly, their financial decisions, and in this case, the share value dropping a quarter. The dividend cut comes as Hanes posted a loss of $418 million, or $1.19 a share, compared with profits of $60 million, or 17 cents a share, in the previous quarter. The dividend cut comes as Haynes posted a loss of $418 million. I'm restating that. All right. So remember, we say satisfying consumer needs, wants, desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. Sometimes making that profit is tough. Here it impacts their dividends, and here it went to zero, affecting their stock value. In this case, we have an interesting global marketing story. The strong dollar, is that good or bad for consumers, a strong dollar?
Good.
Why is a strong dollar good for consumers?
Because that means that they get more value per dollar than they
have. Especially when they're buying international goods, right? So when I go to buy something from Europe, and a lot of stuff's come from Europe or other places in the world, if my dollar is strong, it means I get more bang for my buck. In this case, is it good or bad for the business? Well, we've told you it's bad. Why? Why is a strong, why can a strong dollar be bad for business, global business? Why can a strong dollar be bad for global business? Nobody has a clue? Not a stock value. I'm thinking more about the marketing side. Did I see a hand?
I don't know.
Okay. Anybody? Okay.
The actual number of dollars they'll get from their sales.
Well, let me turn around. Strong dollar, if you're on the other side of the pond, if you're in Europe, that means that your euro buys less U.S. goods. They're more expensive to you because the dollar is strong. And so my sales to you are going to be arguably driven down, decline, because you aren't buying as much because my goods are much more expensive to you, strong dollar. So that's the flip side. So for them, the strong dollar dragged down their revenue by about $55 million in that quarter. Here's a negative issue of global marketing, right? So yay, strong dollar, boo, my sales internationally are down. Finally, as a topic, we move to the Super Bowl. How many people watch the Super Bowl? How many people watch Super Bowl ads? How many people watch Rihanna? Okay. Super Bowl 2023 ad review, the best and the worst commercials from the game. No matter what I put up here, some other source will disagree with whatever I put up here. So there are a lot of different opinions on these topics. I'm giving you the one opinion. So AdAge, one of my sources, says, we'll cut to the chase. We love some of the Super Bowl 57 commercials. Some. But not enough of them, nowhere enough of them. Arguably, the biggest problem with this year's batch of big game ads was not so much the lack of ideas, but the over-reliance on one single idea. You can bludgeon viewers into paying attention through the power of celebrity. How many celebrities did we see across the Super Bowl in ads? And sometimes celebrities on celebrities on celebrities. It got a little silly. Spot after spot was packed with the blink and you'll miss some famous folks, celebrity on celebrity action in service of what exactly? Star power, brinkmanship, shameless flexing? A way to say, hey, we can not only blow $7 million on 30 seconds worth of airtime, but we can also afford unlimited payroll. So this might be, we often talk about the use of celebrities. When I give you examples, this might be the overuse of celebrities. So from the USA Today, which for many, many years has put out their ratings based on real people's evaluations in real time of the commercials. What do they say the number one was? The Farmer's Dog Forever, 6.56 on a 10-point scale. I don't know if you remember back to maybe the first day of class when I talked about skills that business people want. They want, among other things, if you remember that list, that I said we'd be touching on, storytelling. The ability to tell a story, and that's exactly what this ad did, and it resonated with the viewers. Yes, ma'am?
It made me cry.
Aw. Well, let's see if it makes anybody else cry. So the good old-fashioned storytelling about the love we have for our dogs delivered in subtle heartstring-pulling style. See, they made you cry. Bonus for the straightforward yet effective end line or tagline, nothing matters more than the years together. Let's see if this pulls on your heartstrings.
Are you gonna be a good boy?
Don't worry, darling.
about the rest of our lives.
From this day forward.
Through thick and thin.
Come on, babe.
I'll be there by your side.
Oh. I'm gonna love you forever.
Real food made fresh delivered. How many of you guys remember seeing that? How many guys liked it? How many of you guys like it now that you're seeing it? How many people think, nah, silly? Okay, we have a mixed review. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Number two, according to USA Today's ad meter for Super Bowl, NFL run with it. The NFL's 2023 Super Bowl spot is a triumph on many levels, conceptually, creatively, culturally. The NFL knows that if it's going to grow, if it's going to survive, it needs to change. It needs to be more inclusive and perhaps harm less players on the field. Watch Diana Flores, quarterback with Mexico's women national flag football team. How many of you guys are following flag football? Apparently, this is the new thing, guys. You got to get on board with these cultural shifts and trends. Sprint, leap, and charm our way through 90 seconds of nonstop mayhem. Couldn't be more entertaining. And the stunts, gags, and inspired cameos, celebrities, Billie Jean King, Mr. Beast, Davante Adams in his parrot suit, add just the right amount of humor to make this resonate. Why is my cursor funky? Is that going to work? Okay. With consumers.
I'm here with world champion Deanna Flores. Deanna, you are so elusive. Is there anyone that can pull your flags?
Well, I'm sure someone can.
You're right here.
What?
Your flag! What are you
doing? I got it!
It's all about the sauce.
Oh, yeah, we gotta run.
She got moves.
Billie Jean King.
I missed it.
Yeah. Oh, hell no.
What's the point?
Housekeeping.
You gotta go higher.
Housekeeping!
Mafia style.
Nice.
Mamá, algo muy raro acaba de pasar.
Ay, princesa, te ves estresada. Respira tranquila. Ven, dame un abrazo.
Mamá.
Ana Alejandra Flores, ven acá o estás castigada.
¡Muerte ya! I'm a wild one. Ooh, yeah, I'm a wild one. Oh, yeah, I'm a wild one.
So the NFL supporting women's flag football. Liked it? Nah. Oh, that one we got more likes on. All right, so that was the second top one. Number three, Amazon Saving Sora is a lovely bit of, again, storytelling, the family's solution to the dog acting out to get more attention. It's a great misdirect at the end as we think we're buying Sora a crate to contain him, but the crate's actually for a new playmate, another dog that they're adopting. Simple, emotional, warm, with a twist ending, again, appeal to this consumer group.
It seems like only yesterday.
Get it, bonito. Good boy.
I'm excited to see you in person. Don't forget your homework.
We're all back in the office next week, right?
Can you believe it?
Now you're all grown up
inside. Come on, let's go. Lockdown is over.
Life is brief, but when it's gone, love goes on and on. Love will live.
Here comes a tree.
I know you can hear me.
Which one?
You might like that one.
Life is brief, but when it's gone, life goes on and on.
I think I see a few tears in the room. How many people like that? How many people thought it was pretty stupid? Oh, we got one stupid there. All right, so that, of course, was for Amazon, again, with nice storytelling. Duncan, starring Ben Affleck. It's great to see a brand actually do something fun with their celeb. Ben Affleck manning the drive-thru to Duncan in Medford, Massachusetts is priceless. You know, he's from that area. He's got that accent. The footage of the surprise customers to whom he's actually serving Duncan food is, of course, gold. And the arrival of his wife, Jennifer Lopez, at the end is the perfect kicker.
Welcome to Dunkin' new special. Dunkin' runs medium or large coffee. Get a donut for an incremental dollar.
Well,
like, how can it be this inexpensive and good?
Cream, no sugar.
I'm just going to have to just give you 10 munchkins.
You look a little lost.
1 second, I'm trying to find the bagels. Do I look familiar?
Oh.
Should I be in it or do you want to just use the self-portrait?
What are you doing here?
Ask me if I like
Is this what you do when you say you're going to work all day?
I got to go, guys.
Grab me a glaze.
Okay. So making use of Ben Affleck. And the final top five, Popcorners Breaking Good. Kudos to Popcorns for gleefully likening its product to methamphetamine. The people I had in my room during this, I actually thought that was a negative. They didn't like the connection between the product and methamphetamine and drugs from Breaking Bad. Brian Cranston and Aaron Paul's chemistry is palpable as they reenact scenes from Breaking Bad. How many of you guys watch Breaking Bad? You know what's going on? Half. It's fun to seeing them back in the RV doing a deal with Tuco Salamanca. Popcorners found the sweet spot honoring the spirit of the show while making the product central to the story. So Popcorners honoring Breaking Bad with Breaking Good.
Yo, these are the bomb!
And they're air popped, not fried.
Popcorners? You're an artist.
Actually, Jesse, it's just basic ingredients. No, we don't eat our own supply.
Mr. White!
Jesse.
Everyone's gonna want to taste one of these. We call them popcorners. Time! Time! Time!
We've got six signature flavors, y'all.
Seven! You make seven!
Seven works.
Yeah.
Seven works, okay. You like? Don't like. Oh, bigger number didn't like. Finally, we can't go through them all. We're already wasting a lot of our time, spending a lot of our time on this. How about the $7 million you spent to be in the bottom three? So I was a little disappointed that people didn't like the M&M Super Bowl. In the brand's big game spot, Maya Rudolph sweetly sings the praises of Ma and Ya's disgusting new candy-coated, chewy, chunky clam bites. And it ends with red M&M holding up a sign that reads, "Help." There's not a lot to say here besides yuck that covers both the supposed candy and the spot. My comment, but wait, there's more to come in a second after we get done with this. Let's see the ad that, although I gotta let you, people didn't seem to like it, but get a lot of talk to the press about it.
Taste the ocean blossom sand with my yarn.
Chewy, chunky clams.
La, 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 la,
Ma and Yarn's candy coated clam bites. You want one?
With my and Yarn's.
You're supposed to say yes!
People did not care for the concept, I guess. I thought it was funny, but what do I know? Temu, I guess. Temu, am I saying that right? How many people know Temu? No? Am I saying it wrong? Anyhow, shop like a billionaire. Temu, the online marketplace, whipped up a colorful, energetic 30-second spot for the big game, but we've seen this concept, practically the same spot, in fact, 100 times before. The spot likely goosed up some of their app downloads, but we're guessing this won't have the longer-term brand effect that Temu was surely hoping for with their $6 or $7 million spend. And you guys don't know the brand anyhow.
I like it.
Yep.
It's mine. The prices blow my mind.
Cha-ching.
I feel so rich.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a billionaire.
I'm shopping like a billionaire. Okay, I'm shopping like a billionaire. Let's go.
Download the Temu app and shop like a billionaire.
Sorry, it's Temu, not Temu. That's probably why you didn't know what I was talking about. Temu, how many people know Temu? No. All right, so they need a little brand recognition. Where's my man? People don't buy from brands they're not aware of. Finally, this only came up on one of the two sites I was using for information, YouTube's Achtung Baby Live at the Sphere. Irish Rockers officially announced on Super Bowl Sunday that they will stage shows dedicated to their 1991 LP Achtung Baby to launch the city, Las Vegas' massive new globe-shaped venue called the Sphere. The show may be great, but the promo did not do well. Anybody like you too? Okay, so here was their very short and not well-liked promo.
An unidentified object has been spotted over the skies.
I got nothing. People didn't like it. I don't have any clue if they created this after the Chinese balloon thing, or if that's a coincidence. I don't know what that was all about. So my further comment here is M&M's actually had a little more to say after this. How M&M's wrapped up its Super Bowl campaign, the M&M's spokes candies reunited during the Super Bowl, concluding an elaborate three-week story arc that the candy marketers' executives say reinforced the brand's purpose while encountering controversy, absurd humor, multiple partnerships, and four separate mentions over the course of and right after the big game, so that's a promotion strategy. First came a second quarter commercial, Maya's, the fictitious clam-filled candy, promoted by the interim spokesperson Maya Rudolph. The ad featured a last-second appearance by the red M&M holding up a sign that reads, "Help!" Humor. A five-second bumper running in the game's fourth quarter includes a voiceover reading, "Tonight's game on Fox is sponsored by M&M's. We're back." M&M's and their reunion were also a topic of conversation in a fourth quarter Peacock ad for Poker Face, which I'm not going to show. Immediately following the game, the Lentils assembled for a 15-second press-style conference, assuring that they're back for good and reaffirming their purpose. This was right after the game.
I can't believe we were actually put on pause.
Am I anxious about being back? Does it seem like I am?
I'm glad to be back because this is what I was made for. I mean, as a walking, talking candy, my options are pretty limited.
So that was their follow-up. We wanted from the beginning to create a stir, create a controversy, get people involved, which we seem to have done, says Rankin Carroll, Chief Brand and Content Officer. Many news outlets covered the initial story as though M&M's had given in to its critics, which is the way I presented it because that's what I saw. But the increasingly absurd storyline around Rudolph, she had her face printed on lentils, changed the name to Maya's, and eventually pushed a clam-filled candy, showed M&M's comedy hand. Carroll said, the brand all along wanted no part of the culture wars. I don't want to be trite, but we're here to use fun, the power of fun, to help more people feel like they belong. That's out of our values, our corporate values, our brand values, and that's what we're on the planet to do with this brand. So this is their brand values, brand image, reimagined over 3 weeks of interesting controversy. So that's where they stand. All right, a little later than normal, we pick up with Lecture Notes, page 85 and page 136 of the textbook, continuing chapter 5, Understanding Consumer Behavior. So we have been walking through these various influences on consumer behavior, and we ended up with a psychological influence on consumer decision-making, learning. And I said that was a little lengthy for us to finish off with last week. So learning involves changes in behavior resulting from your observation and experiences in the world. One way that we engage in learning is through classical conditioning. Who had enough psychology recently enough to remember the name connected or the animals connected with classical conditioning? You. Dogs, and who was the Pavlov and his dogs, okay? this is a form of learning that accumulates as we come in contact with stimuli and connect them with other stimuli. And if you remember the experiment, or if you've ever heard of it, or maybe you haven't heard of it, Pavlov has a dog, and he gives the dog some food. And as the dog sees the food, of course, it begins to salivate the way a dog would for the food. He also rings a bell. In this scenario, the unconditioned stimuli is the food. The unconditioned response is the salivation. And those two things connect with the dog in a visceral kind of way. Note the dog does not think about this process. It's an automatic process. The dog doesn't look at the food and say, in order to eat that food, I got to start salivating. It's automatic. But now we have the conditioned stimulus, the thing that has no meaning until we start pairing it with something. Bell, food, salivation. Bell, food, salivation. Presently, bell, no food, dog still salivates. We've taken a stimuli that has no meaning at all to the dog, a bell, and paired it with or associated it with something that does have meaning, the food, and we get the conditioned response. So the conditioned stimulus, bell, conditioned response, salivation, and we get the response even though the original food isn't there. Yeah? Human behavior. We're walking along the road one day, and all of a sudden, outside a bush, a dog rushes at us, barks, woof, and bites us, inflicting grievous pain upon our calf. We have to go to the hospital. It's a mess. Next time we're walking down the roadway, and we hear a bark, woof, do we stop and think, you know what? Holy mackerel, the last time a dog barked at me, he came out and bit me. I better get out of here. No, I don't think we do. Instantaneous connection between the sound and the fear. This happens, of course, in a lot of marketing situations. We take something that has no meaning, like the bell. We take an emblem, a symbol, an icon, a brand name that has no meaning, and we pair it up with something that does have meaning. And presently, the brand name itself gives us the response. Classic old example, and actually a nasty, bad one, the cowboy in Marlboro Country for Marlboro cigarettes. For us, in America, cowboys bring about a certain feeling, machismo, manliness, sexiness, toughness, whatever. Marlboro cowboy, feelings of those things. Pretty soon you saw Marlboro, you had those feelings of, that's the way I feel, I want that brand, assuming that's the way it works. Or Victoria's Secret, in their heyday, no more, they're not in their heyday anymore. Angels. Normally we don't think of the angels as being sex symbols, but we pair them up with the Victoria's Secret, pair them up. Pretty soon the angels, Victoria's Secret come to mind. We feel sexy. Marketers do this all the time. Take a stimuli that has no meaning, a brand name, a product, an icon, and pair it with something that has meaning, a cowboy, an angel. And suddenly we're able to get that reaction from the consumer. They aren't thinking about it. It's an automatic response. Pretty cool. So that's Pavlov and his dogs. Ring bell. Yeah, bell rings and I get a treat. Bell rings and I get a treat. It went on that way for days. Then out of the blue, bell rings and I get nothing. Nada. I mean, can you seriously call my attack unprovoked? The dark truth about Pavlov's dog. One form of learning, fortunately for us in marketing, you can learn to make these associations, is classical conditioning. Another form of learning, operant conditioning. And now I forget if it's in your lecture notes. Maybe the answer is already there. But who knows what animal we're talking about here in general when we think about this from psychology? Nobody knows that one. Well, here we're talking about B.F. Skinner and his rats, a different form of learning. In this case, we say that the entity, the animal or the human being, operates on their environment in a trial and error fashion. And sometimes they get a reward. And if they get a reward from a behavior, what are they likely to do again? Engage in that behavior. In the original experiment, Skinner makes a rat hungry, drops the rat into a maze, a wooden maze where they have to wander around. Rats are naturally curious anyhow. The rat scampers around. Eventually sees a bar, not this kind of bar, presses the bar, and gets a food pellet. Wow. Second time you put the rat in the maze, it scampers around, but man, as soon as it recognizes where it is, zoom, it goes for the bar, right? Third time, there's not much scampering. Zoom, 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 zoom. Hits the bar, gets a reward. Here, unlike in classical conditioning, there's, to the extent a rat has cognition, there's cognition going on. The rat is thinking about it, learning that the behavior gives them a reward. Yeah? And so they press the bar. You, when should you never go grocery shopping? Because you're going to buy too much food? When you're hungry, like the rat. So you're going through the grocery store, and you notice an end cap display for something new. It looks interesting. Kumquat-flavored ding-dongs. And you grab a bunch, and you put them in your cart, and you take them home. People love them. Oh, my God, this is what is this? How do you feel about bringing home your kumquat-flavored ding-dongs? Pretty darn good. What happens the next time you go to the store? You pick up those again. Same reaction. People are loving it. I'm glad you got those again. I really love those. You're now connected to kumquat-flavored ding-dongs, even though it wasn't thoughtful. You engage in trial and error. Boom. What a reward. Exciting for you. We'll press lever for food. That's the second type of learning that we know people engage in. Make something appealing, get people to try it, give it to them for free. Maybe they'll like it. Those are not kumquat-flavored ding-dongs, but that's what a ding-dong is. Social learning, another way that people, some animals, learn is by observing others in their environment. So when you're a child, you observe what goes on in your environment. And from a very early age, they say, I'm not a child psychologist, young girls begin to act more like women, and young boys begin to act more like men. Not 100%, but by and large, we learn from observing our environment. What brand of toothpaste did mom use? Shampoo, toilet paper, laundry soap. We observe the behavior. A little cartoon indicating that. So here in Family Circus, we have Jeffy sitting on the couch reading a book, just like Dad is reading a book. And he looks over at the kid, PJ, stop copying me. But of course, he's copying Dad. Classic example of this from 100 years ago, which was a public service announcement, made the point, don't behave in negative activity that your kids may learn to do.
Like father, like son. Think about it. For information on smoking and heart disease, ask your heart association.
Come on, Dad. You see, he's imitating you. He's learning from you in a social environment. Now you're going to have him imitate you smoking? Don't do that. So all of these types of, and cognitive learning, learning about things in a rational way. You think about them. You study them. You evaluate them carefully as opposed to impulsively. And you learn what might be best for you through rational cognitive thinking. So the good point about this is consumers can learn through any one of these processes to be loyal to your brand, to prefer your brand over all others. That's pretty important in marketing. What can I do through what form of learning encourage people to be loyal to my brand, to come back for it? Yeah? Attitudes and beliefs are another psychological influence that we've touched on before that affect consumer decision making. So based on what consumers have learned from processing information, we talked about that, evaluating alternatives, we talked about that, making a choice, and evaluating the choice, consumers form beliefs about the stores, the products, the decision processes they engage in, and based on that, they form attitudes. Either favorable, that was a good store, a good choice, a good decision process, or unfavorable, whoops, I shouldn't shop there anymore. So we have to be aware, certainly as marketers, of the beliefs that consumers form about our brands, our stores, and about the attitudes that they have. Sometimes that's great for us. It's fantastic. They love us. Good. Sometimes not so much. What are we doing then? You okay? I see you leaning around. Oh, you're just leaning. So what happens when those attitudes are positive? Well, they influence the consumer's next choice. That was good. I'm going to go get some more of those kumquat flavored ding-dongs. They were good. I'm not getting any more of those clam M&Ms. Those were not good. So that would be the negative side. So my point is, I'm going to the middle. When attitudes don't exist, for example, a new brand or an unknown brand, or are negative, they're also going to influence consumers' choice. In general, impulse buying aside, we don't buy things we don't know about. We don't have any attitude about it. We're neutral. We don't know. I'm not going to try that. I don't know what it is. Or negative, I know what it is and I don't like it. So thinking about these things, marketers have to be aware of them, reinforce the positive ones, and do what? Find ways to change the unfavorable attitudes, beliefs and attitudes that consumers may have about us. So when they're positive, be aware of them, reinforce them. When they're negative, how are you going to change them? Well, the only tools we have in marketing are the four tools and the four P's of the marketing mix: product, price, promotion. What can we do? Well, we could think about changing the beliefs about a brand's attributes, its characteristics. I'm considering taking a trip over the summer. I'm thinking about going to England or Japan. And I got to tell you, my language, as you will agree, my language skills aren't that good to begin with. I don't speak English so good. Now I got to think about going to Japan. Language is going to be a terrible problem for me. That's not going to work. Between those two choices, where am I more likely to go based on the criteria I just laid out? Well, my belief about the Japan trip is it's not going to be good for me. I don't know language good. England sounds good, okay? So if you're aware of that and you're trying to influence me to take a trip to Japan, how can you change my beliefs about this situation? Well, what you need to know is when you sign up for our trip to Japan, language is not a problem. We provide you with simple phrases. We have a tour guide with you. The concierge at the hotel knows English well and can guide you around. We can provide somebody with you to go to the various sites. Oh, well, then I guess maybe the trip to Japan wouldn't be so bad. Language isn't a problem. I've changed your beliefs about that particular set of attributes, right? Or maybe what I can do is find a way to change your perception of the importance of the attributes. As you think about going out into the world and getting a job, where do you expect there to be more economic growth? In England or in the Asian countries, in Japan, in the Pacific Rim? Where would you think there'd be more future growth? In the Asian countries, Pacific Rim, Japan. So if on your resume, as you go out, you can talk about your trip to Japan and your experiences there and your cultural experiences and your language, man, employers are going to be impressed with that. Oh, really? I hadn't thought about that. Wow, maybe I should really see this, what I thought was negative, as a positive on my resume. I've managed to change your thinking about the brand and its attributes by changing your perception. Or maybe I can find a way to add new product attributes that you were not aware of. you're going to go to England. It's, you know, it's rainy. It's damp. You're going to go drink some ale in a pub. How about going to Japan? You'll go to a geisha house. They'll have lovely entertainers. You'll sit on cushions. You'll sip some sake while people sing to you, and you'll have a wonderful meal that you're not getting in England. Oh, I hadn't even thought. I wasn't even aware of that. Wow. Maybe I should go to Japan. So to the extent that we understand consumers don't have favorable beliefs about our brand, our attributes, our characteristics, how can we change it? Arguably here, through examples of either changing their beliefs about a brand's attributes, changing the perception of the importance of the attributes, or adding new product attributes to cause them to rethink their decision process. This is a case where marketers had to change a cultural value in order to get guys involved with, believe it or not, body wash. In the old days, body wash was a women's product. It was a feminine product. Guys didn't use body wash. They used, I don't know, Irish Spring soap, Lava. They didn't use body wash. So Nivea for men, Active 3, can be used both as a shampoo and a body wash, but also functions as a shave gel for both above and below the neck. Drugstore chain Walgreens featured male grooming in each of its stores on Saturdays in June of whatever year that was, dubbing the event Saturday Dudes to explain to guys how body wash was okay to use if you were a guy. Changing the values, the evaluation of these things. Axe introduced a shower gel to guys with a risky campaign, How Dirty Boys Get Clean. It's now the most popular men's brand with 7% share of total body wash market. Quite a change from guys saying the product wasn't for them. We see the negative attitudes. How are we going to influence them and change their mind? Sometimes that's easy to do. How about men's lingerie? It's a thing. It's from a company called Mangere. I won't ask you to put up your hand if you are wearing Mangere right now, but is this something that's going to catch on in manly America? I see somebody shaking their head no. So here's a problem, question you probably never asked yourself. Why don't men wear lingerie? It's one of those topics that, until now, has never really needed addressing. But Mangere is actual lingerie brand for men, is here to change the discourse on gender-specific intimates. Mangere intends to change the way men think about their underwear and how they look in them, providing a unique collection of lingerie exclusively for men. And again, it's an actual, real-life... Wait a second. Don't laugh at these guys. Wouldn't you like to see your manly... There you go. You're a manly man in a nice sheer fly contour tights. All right. So that's a different question. How quickly are we going to change the cultural values, beliefs of American men to jump on board that? Maybe in a couple semesters I'll come back and people go, yeah, I'm wearing that. Maybe not. Lifestyles. Your lifestyle influences, well, how you live by definition and the sorts of products you buy. So these are the individual patterns of living as reflected by what you're interested in, the opinions you have, what you buy, and your activities. We measure your lifestyle with a technique called psychographics. It's a technique of measuring values, attitudes, and lifestyle. I took a picture of this guy outside the Bowman Hall one day. I asked him his permission, but this is sort of his lifestyle. I live, I ride, I am Jeep. He's pronouncing the kind of guy he is. He's a Jeep guy, right? This Vals typology attempts to look at consumers' lifestyles using some psychographic techniques. And what this research has found is that we can divide people in terms of how they live their lives based on their amounts of resources, very low resources, who have a lot, don't have much risk tolerance, they can't afford to lose anything, so they're low innovators, up to the top of folks that have high resources. That's health, that's education, that's money. And they are highly innovative individuals. And then In the more middle ground, you see that we have lifestyles driven by three different primary motivations. Those who are driven by their ideals, those who are driven by a need for achievement, and those who are driven by a need for self-expression as they live their lives. And then the low end of the resource scale, less educated, less wealth, are believers. They are very dogmatic. They know what they believe, and they're going to live their life by those beliefs. Better educated, but still driven by ideals, sort of the philosophers, the thinkers. Strivers are those people that don't yet have the lifestyle they want. So they are going to have a very high credit card debt. They're going to be, as they try to take on all of the achievement of the achievers. The achievers are those folks who've obviously accomplished things in their life. Makers are those people that express themselves, but in these cases, by doing things themselves. And experiencers are those who express themselves by the experiences that they live. Let's take a look at a commercial that I would say is aimed at makers. Self-expression by doing it. You do it, we make it happen at Lowe's. And, you know, if you're wealthier, maybe you would have to pay somebody to do all that good work. But this would be a different form of self-expression. The experiencers might live this life.
They say good things come to those who wait. What do they know? Why wait when you can get the Yamaha motorcycle, ATV, or Yamaha Rhino of your choice right now? The Yamaha Why Wait sales event.
Now, I'm not saying there can't be any crossover in lifestyles, but you can see that this is definitely a different motivational sense than having the excitement of painting your room. These guys do have their own website out here, and it has all the things that we've been chatting about. So, I don't know, let's take a look at their definition. As they talk about strivers, as a consumer group, strivers have low resources and an achievement motivation. Members of this group typically have revolving employment, high temporary unemployment, use video and video games as a form of fantasy, are fun-loving, are imitative, rely heavily on public transportation, are the center of low-status street culture, desire to better their lives but have difficulty in realizing their desires, wear their wealth so they can show that they're somewhat successful. And, of course, our friends over in the category of achievers also have an achievement motivation, but members of this group have a me first, my family first attitude, believe money is a source of authority, are committed to family and job, fully scheduled, goal-oriented, hardworking, moderate, act as anchors of the status quo, because they're doing quite well, thank you, are peer-conscious, private, professional, and value technology that provides a productivity boost. So if you pictured your target market as one of those two types, it should speak to you differently in terms of the ads you would run, the words you would use, the themes you would have, the celebrities you would make use of, as you think about those consumers' lifestyle for your target audience. Then there are a series of social-cultural influences on your decision-making. These include personal influences, reference group, family, social class, subculture, and culture. So here we are over in this part of the model, culture, subculture, social class, reference group, family. We call these normative influences. So your decision to try a product, how you evaluate a product, your purchase decision, how satisfied you are can be influenced by the attitudes of other people. Have you ever bought that shirt, bought that pair of pants, whatever, thought you were looking pretty good, and have somebody go, what were you thinking? Anybody ever have something like that happen? Did you really feel good after that happened, or did you say, it was on sale or something, right? When you buy that new car, new to you car, and you drive it up to your friends, you don't want them to say, I heard there's a lot of problems with that particular model. That's not what you want to hear, right? Hey, can I go for a what ride? So whether, who's ever been influenced to try a restaurant, a book, a movie, some music by a friend? You wouldn't even try it, perhaps, if they didn't suggest it. So this personal influence can be quite an influence on other consumers. We have a group of people called opinion leaders. Opinion leaders are interpersonal influence for you who are highly attuned to the media environment for fashion or sports or restaurants or books or movies. And they know what's going on. They know what's hot. They know what's new. And you know they do. And so they're the person you turn to and ask about that new car or ask about that new restaurant or that new movie or that new technology because you know they're well attuned to it. And you value their opinion. Anybody, an opinion leader for anything by any chance? Other people turn to you because you're highly attuned to something? What's that? Probably restaurants that you don't eat at. Missing food. So if you're an opinion leader, you are probably influencing other people. And of course, the people that you do influence trust you more than they trust those silly marketers. Obviously, these days, we also have vast opinion leaders online, right, with a group of followers too. And they influence them as well. This is Calvin and Hobbes. Nowadays, says the young boy, ads don't just sell a product, they sell an attitude. Look at this ad. He says to the imaginary tiger, here's a cool guy saying nobody tells him what to do. He does whatever he wants, and he buys this product as a reflection of his independence. The imaginary tiger says, so basically this maverick is urging everyone to express his individuality through conformity and brand name selection, buying the same thing he buys. And the kid says, well, it sounded more defiant the way he said it. So we are influenced by other people. Opinion leaders influence us. Word of mouth is a more generic form of personal influence. This is the idea that you not only talk to people who may be well established in an area, but you also talk to other people, other friends who may chat. So if you're on a website, there may be the influencer and then people chatting among themselves as well, which would be the idea of word-of-mouth influence in the days of computers. PQ Media says $1.82 billion will be spent by marketers to get people talking about their brand. This leads to the idea, of course, of viral stuff or buzz marketing. And you can actually be a buzz agent to get people talking about products. Get buzz-worthy products from your favorite brands. Share your opinion and spread the word about your experiences. You can join up, hear some participating leading brands and getting buzz agents to talk about their products. Starts in just three easy steps. Tell us about your interests. Get invited to try products perfect for you. Share your experience. I feel that my experience with an item will be more, well, it's going too fast. But the point is all these people who are buzz agents feel that they're giving their honest opinions to other people who will appreciate it. So marketers are giving away free stuff to get people talking about their product. Who are the 10 top influencers in social media? I don't know if this is updated. 2020, probably have to update this, so let's see who we got. Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah. Justin Bieber, yeah. Taylor Swift, Ariana. Selena Gomez, Katy Perry, at least I know these people, Kim Kardashian West, Beyonce, and I don't know Felix as well. Anybody know Felix? Oh, well, I'm sorry, PewDiePie. Yeah, what? And Kylie Jenner, the top people in 2020. These people influence the internet. Followers, send them some product. Get them talking about your product, yeah? So let's think about how this influence works in a network world, but let's start in the old world of broadcast, okay? So how would we get consumers? We know consumers don't buy products they're not aware of. If you don't know about the brand, you're not going to buy it. So how do we get awareness? Well, we do a big, broad sort of thing. We use TV and radio and out-of-door advertising to build awareness about the thing. You guys know the brand KTEL, the liquor brand KTEL, K-E-T-E-L? Doesn't matter then. Then, to get people to think about it, you might use direct mail and brochure. Why? Because you can get a lot more information where they're actually looking at the thing that they're considering. Okay. Then, to get preference for it, you might give them a product test, a trial sample, a trial size, do a comparison for them against the existing products, purchase. Well, the action is the in-store purchase. And then how might you build loyalty? Well, maybe you offer them reward points. So come back and buy 10, and we'll give you one free. All of this is still valid, but we have to rethink it in the world of social media. So in the world of social media, how do we get awareness? Well, we use search engine optimization. We create buzz. We put up blogs. How do we get people to consider our product? Maybe we make sure that we show up in their online research, or we have user reviews, that social influence. How do we get preference? Through getting them involved in our social media network, YouTube, making our search local, so when they look for a men's men's lingerie near me, it pops up locally. Action, well, we can do things like group discounts. How many of you guys have ever used Groupon for something? Groupon? Yeah? Okay. Purchase online or in-store or by mobile. Loyalty, we can get friending from them to us through Facebook or Twitter or email, where we can do customized upselling. And unlike the old days, we didn't really have the idea of advocacy for our brand. You might actually get a consumer who likes you so much that they'll come in and do reviews of you, link to you, like you, and in their own right, create additional social buzz for the brand. Does anybody consider themselves an advocate for any brand out there? You're hooked to their community, you comment, you review stuff, you like their stuff? Hasn't worked that well here, but it's a new way of thinking about this connection in the world of social media. All right, so we build up this on top of the old in our marketing funnel from awareness down to loyalty and then advocacy. Here's a true example of the impact of word-of-mouth buzz a while ago, but Philips Sonicare Essence sent a $70 Sonicare Essence toothbrush to 30,000 buzz agents along with coupons. You have to be sure that your product works, that consumers like it. Otherwise, you get the opposite effect, negative reviews. You don't want that. So they do this. The 30,000 agents who liked this good product each told an average of 9.4 people. So 9.4 times 30,000, those 282,000 people in turn told an average of 4.14 more people for a total of 1,449,480 people getting exposed to this new product idea, and Philips said this represented a boost of $2.5 million. Not bad for sending out these free Sonicare Essence toothbrushes. It can work. So whether it's endorsing a skincare product, a luxurious handbag, a new model SUV, or even the latest knitting accessory, there's a digital influencer for virtually every product. How does it work? Digital influencers build brand awareness. Consumers generally don't buy products they're not aware of. So social media influencers have a solid understanding of the platforms they're using and how to create impactful and engaging content which can build more awareness for your brand. We can use it to strengthen our customer relationships. 77% of consumers have had relationships with brands for a decade or more. And 61% of loyal consumers would make an extra effort to shop from their favorite brand. So if you can build a favorite brand, it can certainly come back and help you out with loyalty. So it's important to establish a connection with your target market. Consumers are more likely to trust peer recommendation. Peer recommendations, as they are generally considered more trustworthy then claims in brand ads, and social media influencers can be a very powerful force with their followers. I think we asked this before, but how many of you guys follow some social media influencer and sort of pay attention to them? Maybe a third, maybe over a third of us. improve buying decisions with unbiased opinions. Social media influencers are great storytellers. Back to that idea of storytelling again, by the way. And know how to communicate effectively with their audiences. One of the main reasons why consumers trust influencers is because they can relate to these individuals on a personal level. They know them. They like them. Influencers don't just put up an ad on their feeds. They talk about the products in detail, how to use them, if they're a value for money, what consumers should expect, etc. Basically, influencers cover the most asked questions that consumers generally have about any brand or products, and this can massively boost a brand's reputation and drive sales. How many of you guys have watched an unpacking video? I got this new product, and I'm unpacking it right now and going to tell you about it. Why would anybody watch somebody unpacking a product? We like it. We're interested. We like them. We like the product. What happens next? Storytelling. You looking at me? We know that consumers' choices in retail stores are affected by what they see on the shelves or racks, but now come reports that their choices are also affected by how they are seeing themselves. In other words, shoppers behave differently in the presence of other people. You know this, I presume, from a bit of your personal experience. You know you tend to buy differently when shopping with mom or dad or a friend than you do when, say, you're rushing through a store alone after work. But recent studies go deeper than that, and they say anonymous people around you can influence your choice. For example, consumers feel more negative emotions, annoyance, self-consciousness when they're in retail environments where there are a lot of people around them. Have you ever been to a store that's too crowded, too many people? Does it make you want to stay and shop, or you want to get out of there, right? Consumers change their behavior to choose products that might be considered more normatively appropriate, low-fat cookies rather than double-stuffed Oreos, when the store is busier, when people are more close to them and can see what they're choosing. Consumers alter their behavior even in the presence of just one other person, say a hovering salesperson. How many of you guys have had a salesperson follow you around and keep trying to help you beyond what you want? Leave me alone. Go away. I'm out of here. Words to sell by, a consumer's choice of product might not be affected by whether they want to actually buy it, but by whether anyone is standing around them when they pick it up off the shelf or rack. The point, hover with care. The right attention can prompt consumer choice, but if your consumer feels observed, she may just walk out. That influence of other people outside of us can influence our decision-making process. I probably have more exciting things to say on the next slide, but I'm out of time for today. Happy Valentine's Day to y'all.